On this program, January the 4th, 1981, it's about a year and a half ago, this program, tape number 474, if you have it, or you can get it if you don't have it. I mentioned a book that came out just in 1980, the end of 1980, but I haven't seen it on the stand or advertised anywhere, and you can imagine that it is probably suppressed, and we'll have to go searching for it through other means in the bookstores that are available. The book is called Assault on Eternity, written by Leslie Rose, who made an expedition with Admiral Byrd, and a participant in the 1956 Antarctic Expedition with Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd. This author referred to Byrd as a political admiral who was considered one of the nation's top military explorers, and he died in 1957. 23 years after his death, this Leslie Rose wrote in the book, the access to his papers remains closely guarded by his family. Now, all I have is a book review from the Washington Post. I don't have the book. It's been a long time, a year and a half, but I don't have it yet. The papers of Admiral Byrd are locked up, and this biographer wanted to write a story of Admiral Byrd having gone on an expedition, but discovered that he was forced to cut the plan short when he was denied access to the Admiral's papers. This is somebody who went on an expedition with him in 56, but the 46-47 expedition was covered up. It was called Operation High Jump. It was after the World War II expedition, and that's what led Byrd down to Antarctica. Admiral Byrd had enemies within the surface, this author said, because he had high up political connections that helped him leap to higher rank over others that came before him. Now, this is what happened to Alexander Haig, who graduated from West Point and was about 243rd down from the class and jumped above all of them to go over with Douglas MacArthur in Korea when he got out of West Point. He leapfrogged through the help of Henry Kissinger and the Rockefellers, a handpicked general, to leapfrog. And the question is, did Admiral Byrd get his advantages because he covered up and allowed to be locked up what he saw in 1946 or 47. This book has just a brief description of the way, the book review of the way the material was locked up, and mentions that in 1947, when he returned, he was met by Secretary of the Navy James Forrestal, who greeted Admiral Byrd when he returned from that trip in Antarctica. I have several books on Forrestal. One is The Death of James Forrestal by Coral Simpson. They describe it as a murder mystery, not fiction. The murder of the first Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal. This book came out in, let me see if I have the year here, by Cornell Simpson, Western Islands publisher. I didn't write down the date that that was published. I'll have to give that to you next week if you want. They said this murder was the overwhelming result of assassination plot, and it goes into how he fell out of the hospital at Bethesda, Maryland on an alleged suicide, but they concluded it was a clear case of murder. That's one book on Forrestal. Another one that I have, James Forrestal, A Study of Personality and Politics by Arnold Rogow, R-O-G-O-W, published in 1963, like Macmillan. May 22nd, 1949, James Forrestal, America's first Secretary of Defense, plunged to his death from the 16th floor of Bethesda Naval Hospital. He had been put in there for psychiatric treatment, and also when Byrd came home, as I say, he was put in the hospital for other illnesses. I don't know what they called it. They described him as an intellectual poseur, expert on Wall Street and big business. He worked with the power elite. Forrestal had rejected Catholicism and converted. It's a story of his biography, the controversies of Forrestal, and his death, building up to his death at Bethesda Naval Hospital, and considering the links of Admiral Byrd and the secret papers to the Secretary of Navy, because Byrd was an admiral and Forrestal, he was Secretary of Defense, rather. He had to report to him, and tragedies and secrets followed everything that Byrd set out to do. He set out to find the answer to some questions, and all of his machinery went astray, and planes went down, and bodies weren't found. And he gave an opinion of what was happening and warned about World War III down there, that World War II never ended, And then the fellow that he reported to was dead, and Forrestal had been put in a hospital. There's an interesting article regarding this the episodes down at the Falkland Islands in our Monterey Herald this Wednesday. An interview with a man who had a lot of time in Argentina, both in the military and in civilian life. The lead article is "The United States May Be the Loser in the Falklands." And you wonder now, with the controversies going on, how will the United States be the loser? I have a pretty good idea of 10 reasons why, but the expert on this subject is retired Army Colonel Samuel Stapleton. Now, Samuel Stapleton was the former commander of the Defense Language Institute at the Presidio of Monterey. That is the school that Lee Harvey Oswald attended for some language brushing up, and also Reinhard Gehlen from Germany, who flew out here, and I've mentioned this many times on this program. He was the head of Defense Language Institute. He is now, guess what, an executive in the International Trade Mart in New Orleans. The article didn't say how long he's been there. Now, the International Trade Mart in New Orleans was the CIA Gehlen headquarters for Clay Shaw, who was in Nazi Germany with Reinhard Gehlen when he surrendered to Alan Dulles. Clay Shaw had direct links to Argentine and to the assassination of John Kennedy through mob connections of David Ferry and the CIA and Carlos Marcello. But Clay Shaw's connections went to the Gehlen Argentine connections and the Nazi links to the Kennedy assassination. And the headquarters for the Gehlen group was the International Trade Mart in New Orleans. Now that Clay Shaw is dead, it's interesting that the head of the Defense Language Institute for Monterey, an attaché in Argentina at one time for the military, and also a businessman with ties in Argentina, is now an executive at the International Trade Mart in Argentina. He did business there, he worked in Argentina, and he also did military work. He said, regarding Great Britain, he said, "There's resentment against Great Britain. It is deep-seated, stemming from years of the British Empire served as mediator in the border disputes between Argentina and Chile, when British engineers built Argentine railroad, telephone, and telegraph system, and when Argentine perceived them of draining the resources by the British." He said, "I like both countries very much, and I would hate to see anything bad happen, but the eventual loser will be the United States, because they are our allies, both of them. They are friends, and we are in the middle." Now, that is one of the points about this, is that this move will put a wedge into the Allies to begin breaking us apart. There's a wedge between the United States and NATO now because of our policies in Germany and talk of disbanding NATO. There's a wedge between our allies and the building of the Soviet gas line that Reagan has tried to stop, and they need that gas in Europe. There are wedges coming between the United States and their allies. And as I say, if this was a long smoldering problem between Argentina and Great Britain, the United States should not have been sending millions of dollars down there since Reagan's in office, or trading naval maneuvers with them until this was resolved. If we are the friends of both, we should have stayed out of it the last year and a half until the situation was cleaned up. But this is a perfect chance to tear us apart from our allies and to begin shred the United States apart. We're not only broken up because we're reducing the chances of education for the masses in the country, we're reducing the chances for good health care for the crippled and maimed, the amount of money we're going to allocate to these people. The Social Security money is running out by 1983. I read this week the savings and loans banks are collapsing. People have no security in their banking and money system. The institutions are crumbling. The money is going to weapons, and we're sending it also to people who are fighting our friends. That we have no distinction, no morality, and the United States domestically and internationally is crumbling. Now, the people we fought in the last war, Germany and Japan, can sit back and make their televisions and their computers or their cameras and their cars and laugh at us, because we have to make decisions between these various people and sit there and be humiliated like a yo-yo going up and down or a tennis ball going back and forth. The United States has put itself in this situation. And how did they put themselves there? By bringing their former enemies over to this country with this intense paranoia to have this Third World War, to wipe out the Soviet Union, and then have, in quotes, world peace. This thing has been going on and festering ever since the Russian Revolution. And in the process, the United States can be divided, it can be broken down economically, militarily, and I doubt if we solve anything down the Falkland Islands, it's going to be some other island and another area again, and it will continue. The Washington Post had an article this week, or just last week, March 30th, Reagan backs Antarctica study. Would you believe that? It's a news story. President Reagan has affirmed his administration's commitment to conduct scientific research in Antarctica with other Antarctica treaty signers. Do you have any idea of the budget the United States has mailed down to Antarctica since World War II? If you go to the bookstores, the federal government bookstores such as Golden Gate in San Francisco or the government printing offices, get the back literature. I have it in my files, a lot of it on books available to Antarctica. The building there, the shipping there, the money going there, the equipment going there. The United States hasn't let a hunk of ice sit there with a bunch of penguins on it and pretending we don't know what's going on there. This has been a place that is going to be more in the news. We've built it up and built it up, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. And I hope you're ready. Reagan asked the National Science Foundation to continue a budget to manage the Antarctica program. Can you imagine anything so asinine or insulting as if it hasn't been going on continuously and all that area is charted out and mapped? There's the Rockefeller Plateau. There's the Hitler area. Get your maps on Argentine and Antarctica and how close it is to Argentine and see what's really going on. Now, are we going into World War III? People call and say, are we on the verge of war? Well, you won't know what started World War when it begins, and most people don't even know that it never stopped, that World War II never stopped. Admiral Byrd knew it, and other people know it, but it's been going on continuously. So I just thought I'd pull out of the history books a little bit of history of how World War II started to show you how aware the intellects and the thinkers are in this country. There's one thing I know, and that is that the best educational institutions such as Harvard or Yale or Princeton or Stanford or MIT or Oxford or Cambridge, these places produce cauliflowers. Those people came out with heads so muddled, they've done nothing to improve the world in general. They have left us with mass starvations, weather control, mind control, medical medications. We still have the increased binary nerve gases, nuclear weapons, weapon systems. Still, as I say, we're economically bankrupt. But who cares how World War II started? If you don't know that, you won't know how World War III started. There's a book, there's a lot of stories, of course, how World War II began, but there's a book that gives a pretty precise definition called Burn After Reading by Ladislas Farrago. Now, he's written some marvelous books on espionage and World War II, and also his book Aftermath of the migration of the people from World War II, from Italy and Germany, that went down to South America, to Paraguay, Uruguay, Brazil, Chile, Argentine, the Nazi-ness. He did a magnificent job on that. And in his book, Burn After Reading, The Story of Espionage, he has a chapter appropriately called Operation Canned Meat. And it begins, I'll read just a few sentences from this chapter. August the 10th, 1939, Reinhard Heydrich, Hitler's head of the secret police of the Gestapo, called a goon into his office, a man named Alfred Najuk, N-A-U-J-O-C-K, Najuk, described as a brainless tool, somewhat of a orangutan or an ape, a huge, heavy-set, tall guy, but hairless. Incidentally, remind me of a description somewhat of David Ferry in New Orleans, but he was smaller of build. And they call this guy in, and they tell him, Heydrich tells Najak, he says, The Fuhrer has decided to settle the Danzig question in Poland once and for all. We're going to smash Poland. So we will have X day and Y hour. X day will be for the provocateurs, and Y hour will be when the war begins. This was in August, and the war began in September 1939. Now, what the Fuhrer needs, Heydrich said, and this is documented in many, many books, we have to create a cause for the war. So we'll start with the Polish campaign without a formal declaration of war. And then we'll have a counterattack, and we'll tell the world it was the Poles who fired the first shot. But telling isn't enough because of the Western press. They need practical proof, hard clues. You see, he refers to the foreign press, and of course, Reuters and Associated Press, United Press, and ABC. Don't you always know they need the hardest proof before they put anything on the air, okay? I mean, the biggest liars that came down the pike. But he says, we need some hard proof. So Heydrich wants to work with the Fuhrer, and they bring in this ape. He says, we will simulate a series of frontier incidents and make it appear that the attacking forces were Poles. Now, here is a map, he shows him, and he said, we have a radio station, and it is your job, he tells this guy, to stage an incident there and give the excuse for the war. He says, we will hand you 6 trustworthy SD men of their Gestapo and dress them in Polish uniforms, just like at the Battle of Malmedy, the Germans were wearing American uniforms. And at 0 hour, you, the German Nazis, in Polish uniforms, will attack the radio station and seize the radio station. The Poles will take the German station. And we will have a man who will accompany you to broadcast anti-German speeches in Polish to show how bad the Germans are. Then we will have from the Gestapo jail 12 inmates from concentration camps, which they used, and this was documented later. We will use them to make the incident look goddamn real. We'll put them in Polish uniforms and leave them dead on the ground as if they were killed under the attack. We'll give them lethal injections before they'll have those, and then we'll provide gunshot wounds. And after the incident, we'll show them to members of the foreign press. Twice he refers to the foreign press, because the foreign press always needs their verification. And Goebbels is going to bring these people from Berlin. So they agreed, and they gave these Poles these lethal injections, dropped them on the road outside the radio station, and they said, let's refer to the fake Polacks. Those are the people taken by the Gestapo out of concentration camps and dressed as Poles. We'll give this the name canned meat, those guys that could be injected and then shot and left outside the radio station. So they called it Operation Canned Meat, and they rehearsed it August 25th. And sure enough, 2 days later, a car arrives with a Pole. He had his injection and the gunshot wounds, and his face was smeared with blood, and he was still breathing. And they bring this human prop to the station, the radio station, and set this whole thing up and begin to attack Germany in Polish on the air. And then you see these people killed. The Najuk set these men and fired in the air on canned meat. And when the show was over, the Poles, dressed as Poles, who got out of their uniforms and were really Germans, disappeared. And they gave Adolf Hitler the excuse for the war. This was Operation Canned Meat. And what they left on the ground was a man who now was dead, who became the first casualty of the Second World War. Truly, its unknown soldier. And on September the 1st, 1939, the Wehrmacht crossed into Poland, and Hitler had a proclamation against the attack, against the Poles attacking the Germans and the German radio station. And that war began. Within 24 hours of that, there was the Blitzkrieg, and 75% of Polish planes were destroyed, most of them in their hangars. The Nazis ruined the aircraft there and went into Poland, and Poland was Germany's. Now, this kind of wearing uniforms, simulating this, was all known to the American military by the end of the war. We let people out of the Dachau prisons, out of the Nuremberg trials, who simulated Americans and caused hundreds and thousands of deaths in single battles, particularly that bulge in Malmedy in that area that I've been studying extensively. So this subterfuge still goes on today. There's an article in the Washington Post about a person, Ivan Quinteros, who was murdered in Chile. He was not a real political activist in the term that he was fighting the system so much as he was working for social changes. And he left Chile for a while and came back to Chile. And last month, his mother filed a complaint against the government saying that he was not armed when he came back to Chile when he was killed, that a bus full of the police shot him down in front of witnesses, and then they saw the police fire bullets into their own vehicles to simulate a fight. They shot a man, a alleged leftist or suspected leftist. They shot him, and then they shoot the bus as an excuse. He was shooting at us, so we had to shoot him. There were deaths of 10 people recently killed in Chile, and it keeps going on and on. Labor people, labor organizers, an article on human rights in Chile, our great ally that we're recognizing now, and the same agent provocateurs down there. This is Washington Post, March 27th, 1982. And speaking of Chile, there's an article, the Chilean accused of rights violations has now taken a post in the Washington Embassy. This is Ronald Reagan again. A Chilean army colonel who was forced to leave as military attaché in West Germany 5 years ago because of his role of killing thousands of people and torturing them in Chile at his torture center, now works in the Chilean embassy in Washington, D.C. Can you imagine what our capital is today with these kind of people being recognized and whining and dining in those embassies, the Reagan administration at the present time? The man's name is Christian Achernecht, Achernecht. He ran a torture center in Chile. And Der Spiegel ran articles in Germany. He was responsible for the torture of at least 3,500 political prisoners inside of Chile. And when he was stationed in West Germany as part of the Chilean embassy, they kicked him out of West Germany because of his torture and behavior. West Germany couldn't stand this rat, and the United States has him in Washington and recognizes the Chilean embassy. This is March 19th, 1982. This is just 2 weeks ago from the New York Times article. It was also in the Washington Post. The United States State Department, that's Alexander Haig and Caspar Weinberger and Walter Stessel, has taken the position that it is satisfied with the Chilean embassy response, that they put to rest any doubt or question about this man. He was kicked out of Germany and left because of his torture. An official of the German Foreign Ministry confirmed that the foreign minister, Hans-Dietrich Genscher, on the basis of charges, asked him to be withdrawn from the Chilean embassy. So now he represents Chile in the United States. Do you want to vomit? I suppose you can. And against Alexander Haig this week with his holy war said, Alexander's state maintained we have to have a strong nuclear deterrent for protecting the essential values of the Western civilization, and he would not rule out the use of a first-strike nuclear weapon. New York Times this week. What is Western civilization? You better think twice about that. There's a group in California that has headquarters in Germany. I mentioned once with regards to religious cults. It's called the Fellowship of Friends. They have a winery up in Sacramento, unlimited money. They have art, oil paintings, and they pipe in music of Bach and Beethoven and Brahms, because after we have World War III, they're going to maintain the culture of Western civilization, the German culture, mind you. And when Haig begins to talk about the essential values of Western civilization, is he talking about United States civilization or Western German civilization? Keep in mind, he has a holy war, and his mentor is Fritz Kramer, who can't be smoked out, can't be identified with his Nazi past, with his IG Farben family, sitting in the Pentagon making decisions today with a group of cruddy people. What does he mean by Western civilization? In lieu of the heavily funded organizations such as this group, who have headquarters in Cincinnati and also in Carmel and in Texas and about 20 American cities. I have a list of them. Where else are these people maintaining the classics of art that they can produce later, the hidden art, to bring back the German artists? Hitler's paintings have now been returned to Germany by Ronald Reagan again. They were in this country, and so forth. You might have read an article in the San Francisco Chronicle. Don't count on the Golden Gate Bridge in case of an atomic attack. Do you like that kind of talk? Another article in the Monterey Herald this week, an interview of a professor, Ole Holstein, from Duke University, who said the following. He talked to the Monterey Institute out here last week of international studies. He said the Defense Department is hell-bent on having a war. They have decided that war is inevitable if the Soviet Union doesn't change its policies. They're throwing money at the Pentagon. They're trying to restore, in quotes, national will. We will use military might, and the United States has decided, he said, to write off Western Europe as hopeless because it is unwilling to take a hard line against the Soviet Union. That's why I think, in summary, that Haig is going to align with Argentina, the South American Nazis. I think this smiling face with Margaret Thatcher is a front. I think the United States Embassy, our War Department, is geared to the Uruguay, Paraguay, Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Peru, Colombia, the Nazi group down there that we have encouraged, funded, and silently allowed to grow and grow, and the Antarctica team that we have been sending equipment to for years. This particular fellow writes books, and he lectured out here, and he said the administration sees the world in terms of United States-Soviet conflicts. And it goes back, he says, similar to an earlier period before World War II. And he says that the Reaganites are not against communism. They're against the Soviet Union. Now, that struggle began at the time of the Russian Revolution when they kicked the monarchy out and the church besides. And it's been a religious war, a holy war, to get their hands back into Russia and establish the institutions that we have here. There won't be more freedom there any more than there is in Argentina. But we're not fighting for freedom. We're fighting for wiping out the Soviet Union. And this fellow was talking on the Reagan administration has a prescription for a buildup of a limited nuclear war. They refer to a limited nuclear war, and they really believe it. And as I say, a visitor who was in Washington last week said that when they refer to a limited nuclear war, one-third of the American population. Well, I don't think the Falkland Islands is over oil. I don't think it has anything to do with controlling that whole area down there that has been built up for a long, long time. And I think Argentina is testing their muscles now. They're kicking England's ass. They want to get at them. They want to divide us among our allies. They want to start stirring up a lot of rumble and trouble, and they'll do a good job of it. And if this is quiet for a while, it will stir again. There is too much going on in Antarctica, Argentina, and that part of the world too long without something erupting. And I think it's starting very slowly with a few sheepherders and some Baha'is down at the Falklands. But the real issue goes back to what Admiral Byrd saw and wrote about that is locked up in the archives. The truth of what's going to come out of there is what's locked up that we haven't yet been allowed to see. Well, this is enough for this week. We'll get back to some of this and more of the same next week. In the meanwhile, you take care. And this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
KLRB, Carmel by the Sea.